I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We have more on the country's financial meltdown. For years, financial planners have been trying to get more minorities to invest in securities, saying they will not close the wealth gap with whites until they do. So, what are they saying now, after one of the most volatile periods in stock market history? We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But first, President Bush spoke this morning about yet more plans to manage the country's financial mess, including plans for the Treasury Department to take a small ownership stake in some of the country's banks.
Banks have been unable to borrow money, and that has restricted their ability to lend to consumers and businesses. When money flows more freely between banks, it will make it easier for Americans to borrow for cars and homes and for small businesses to expand.
But now, even as the nation's political and financial leaders are working to address the crisis, some are still debating just what caused it. Most agree that one of the key factors in the credit crunch is the large number of high-cost subprime mortgages with ballooning interest rates that borrowers are increasingly unable to repay. But that's where the agreement ends. Progressives say unscrupulous predatory lenders have been pushing these mortgages on unsuspecting homebuyers. Increasingly, some conservatives say the real culprit is a federal law designed to encourage more lending in low and moderate income neighborhoods. We bring you both sides of the argument today. Our guests are John Taylor, president and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. It's an association of organizations that promote access to banking services. And Stan Liebowitz, he's professor of economics at the University of Texas at Dallas. I welcome you both, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
And thanks for having me here.
John Taylor, I want to begin with you. The issue here is the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977. What is it supposed to do? Why was it created?
Simple law passed in 77, as you mentioned, specifically to end the practice of redlining, which was a practice in which banks would identify neighborhoods that were low and moderate income and decide that they simply were not going to make loans in that neighborhood regardless of how creditworthy the individual was. So Congress passed the law prohibiting that practice.
How does it work?
Well, it's simple. The the federal regulators examine the banks every 2 to 3 years, depending on the size of the bank, and determine whether or not they are, in fact, meeting the credit needs, that is, of all the areas that they're chartered to serve, including low and moderate income. There's no quotas. There's no mandate. And in particular, it has to be safe and sound lending. That's in the legislation itself.
Stanley, what's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the CRA as it was just described. The problem is not just the CRA. The CRA is actually a component, and it's not necessarily even the most important component. But in the early 1990s, the federal government decided that they wanted to increase the lending to minorities and poor people, and they also decided they wanted to increase home ownership. One of the methods to do it was to weaken lending standards. And there was a considerable attempt by the government in various parts of it to lower lending standards because that was the most efficient way of increasing the loans going to those areas. The problem was that in order to do that, they had to create a piece of information that turned out to be untrue, which was that those loans really would be sound and reasonably safe. So they perpetrated this story and performed studies claiming to demonstrate that it was true, that relaxed lending standards really wouldn't lead to a large increase in foreclosures and defaults.
Well, how can they create a story? I don't understand that. I don't understand.
Well, there's lots of stories. There's lots of stories out there. They put out a booklet, the Boston Fed, in 1993, telling banks, number one, warning them that they should relax their lending standards because the old ones were antiquated and out of date, and explaining why, if they relaxed various aspects of the lending standards, it really wouldn't lead to much in the way of defaults.
But I'm sorry, doesn't that point to a lack of regulatory oversight overall? And can you
point
to any
regulators.
Bank who actually suffered a penalty because they failed to lend to these neighbors?
Oh, sure. There were banks. There were a whole bunch of banks. I can name half a dozen if I went back to my paper. But Shawmut is one bank. And there were a bunch of other banks that all suffered penalties under the CRA. There were lawsuits from the Justice Department. It wasn't like this was completely toothless. There was also a lot of bad publicity for the banks.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
John Taylor?
There are no penalties under CRA. The only thing that it can occur as a request to either merge or open a branch or something like that can be denied, and it's denied extremely rarely. The lawsuits that he refers to by the Justice Department, well, the first one was brought by George Bush Sr. against a bank in Atlanta, and it was under the Fair Housing Act. CRA was in there, but it was the Fair Housing Law that really drove that case and all the other cases that were brought by subsequently by Janet Reno. Look, the thing that Stan is referring to relative to the Federal Reserve study in the 90s, first off, you're talking about a regulatory study done over 17 years ago that has nothing to do with the current credit crisis, because the current credit crisis has nothing to do with CRA, and I was pleased Stan recognize
that's totally
that.
Wrong.
Stan, go ahead, make your point.
Okay, the fact is that this idea that reduced lending standards was safe is an idea that took hold in the early to mid-1990s, and it's a wrong idea, and it's an idea that I wrote in a paper in 1998, an academic paper, that it was going to lead to an increase in defaults. What it led to, however, first was an increase in homeownership, which was the goal, and they were successful in that. The increase in homeownership led to the price bubble in housing. Increase in demand raises the price. There was a price bubble in housing. The bubble hid the fact that those loans were so bad because people didn't have to default when they could always resell or refinance at a profit. It wasn't until housing prices stopped going up, and it was a long-term price bubble from 1997 to 2006. It was 10 years. Saw the foreclosures.
I just have to jump in for just 1 minute to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with John Taylor, President and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition and University of Texas Economics Professor Stan Liebowitz. We're talking about whether the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977 partly led to the recent Wall Street meltdown. Mr. Liebowitz, two questions, though. If this is the case, why is it that more than half of the subprime loans were made by independent mortgage companies which weren't subject to federal supervision? And why is it that a disproportionate number of subprime loans were for refinancing?
Well, there's two reasons. The story that was put forward in the mid-90s was then pushed into the, it kept getting pushed as being true. And it looked like it might be true because you didn't see the foreclosures. The secondary market in 1998 and 1999, the private secondary market, finally started getting into the act of purchasing those mortgages, and they were holding up.
But nobody made these banks offer these no-documentation loans. Nobody made them offer these loans for second homes and third homes, did they? So I guess the question I don't understand is, how is it possible that this crisis is due to the fact that a very small percentage of the market actually was offering appropriate creditworthy loans to this particular segment of the market, which is a very small part of the market?
If I may.
Go ahead. John Taylor, trying to jump
in.
Ahead.
Go ahead. I mean, Stan keeps talking about a story. The notion that the regulators lowered credit standards is a story. If you want to talk about the real story as to why we're in the current condition, you need only look at the deregulation and lack of a regulatory enforcement that occurred over the last 5 or 6 years that essentially allowed the market to shift to what you were just talking about, Michelle, and that is non-bank institutions that aren't even covered by CRA, were allowed to practice what Alan Greenspan called infectious greed and malfeasance, an absolute freedom to go out and just talk people into loans and give people loans that they probably shouldn't have gotten.
But clearly credit standards were lowered.
No, credit standards weren't lowered. What was lowered was the federal enforcement of the safety and soundness rules, because here's what really changed, and this is the accurate story. Wall Street said, look, you make any loan you want, we will buy them. What used to happen in lending is that banks would hold these loans in portfolios, so if you didn't pay, they actually lost money. The new system, which began about 10 years ago and then really took off 5 years ago, was that Wall Street said, you make piggyback loans, high adjustable rate mortgages, no income, stated income loans, all these funny money loans that have gotten us all into trouble. You make those loans, take your fee, don't worry about holding these loans, we'll buy everything. And so, he talks about, it was all about pushing home ownership. Well, 80-90% of the subprime loans that were made in the last 5 years, which is the period that's gotten us in trouble, were not for home ownership. So,
what were they for?
They were for refinancing. They were just people trying to brokers and lenders convincing people to refinance their house, because every time that happened, the broker and lender got a fee. The appraiser made money. There was, so it was this lending industry gone wild that had no regulatory oversight, and Wall Street was willing to purchase everything.
Then it's not quite as high a percentage of refinancings. It's about 50-50. But the key thing is that why did Wall Street, why did people buy these bad mortgages? We now know they're bad. The ones that had such weak lending standards. And the answer is, if you go back to the sales pitches, and I have a sales pitch in a paper that I've written where I take it apart, they're basically repeating what the Boston Fed said in its manual about lending.
I still don't understand, though, how you account for the fact that more than half of the subprime loans were made by people who were not subjected to this federal supervision.
Well, because
they were not covered
Countrywide
by...
Countrywide was one of those banks. Countrywide had voluntarily agreed to follow the standards set by HUD. There they made this agreement. They said they would follow all the standards of the CRA voluntarily. Now, it's true. No one was forcing them to do
that. And, Stan, didn't they really
do that
for profit?
But they voluntarily did it.
But, Stan, didn't
yes,
they really
they,
do
they
that
for profit? Yes, they did it for profit.
Isn't that what a business
that,
does?
I'm not saying that in the last 5 or 6 years, since 1999 at least, the bankers were being forced to make these loans. They weren't. They were making profits on them. They were happy to make them. The question is, why would anyone have believed that these loans would be good? And the answer was because the story had been told by government agencies and regulators and academics that these loans would be good.
Okay. And John Taylor has an alternate version of that, and
right.
that is?
Right. It has nothing to do with what the Fed was saying, and it has everything to do with the market and who's willing to buy these things. And you had the rating agencies, which are willing to stamp AAA and AA ratings on a lot of these securities. The people who kind of got taken in this whole process were both ends of the lending spectrum. The homeowner at the front end who thought that they were getting into a loan they can afford, and then the securitizer, the investor at the other end who thought they were buying good loans.
And we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I also want to offer each of you the opportunity to say more about this on our blog, npr.org/tellmemore. We will have a link to writings by both of you on this question on our blog. John Taylor is the president and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. He was kind enough to join us in our Washington studio. Stan Liebowitz is a professor of economics at the University of Dallas at Texas. He joined us from Dallas, and I thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.